Our social historians find inspiration for research in the smallest of things, knowing that our shared history often hides in plain sight. We travel roads, pass laneways and street signs without appreciating the events that may have happened there in the past. A photograph found in South Dublin County Council archive illustrates just this. Historian in residence, Cathy Scuffle, has investigated the background stories connected to the image taken in the Crumlin area of Dublin just over a century ago. Her in-depth research has revealed a number of fascinating stories tracking Irish history and links to local, national and international history. And Cathy joins me in studio to discuss her findings. Cathy, welcome back to the History Show.
Thank you very much, Miles. Delighted to be here.
Okay, for the benefit of our listeners, set the scene by describing this photograph, where it was taken, why it was taken, and who is the very, very familiar figure indeed, right in the middle of it.
Fair play. Yes, as you mentioned, Miles, the photograph, it was taken in the Dofus Barn Crumlin area about a century, just over a century ago. And like that, I found it in an archive. I wasn't looking for it. I was looking for something else at the time. But the image itself would be very well known to our friends in history circles. It shows a large gathering of people. We can see the backs of their heads. They all seem to be dressed up. They're out for the day by the looks of it. They're listening to a speaker, a man who's on a raised platform in their midst. In the background, there's a ridge or a hill, which kind of has a man-made appearance to it. And there's two small children sitting up on that ridge. Nearby then, there's another young man who seems to be, well, I think, acting as a lookout for the crowd below. Behind the trees, also in the background, we can just about make out chimney stacks of what seems to be a large, big house, you know, manor house type. Overall, it's a very rural setting. Now, who's the man? Well, the man, the speaker, that's Pádraig Pearse.
Yeah.
And he's dressed in uniform of the Irish Volunteers. And based on that, well, my best guess is for when the photograph was taken, it's pre-1916.
Okay,
anyway.
That's a fair bet.
Now, the fact that he's in uniform, that suggests it could be a recruitment meeting of some kind. Maybe it's preparation for the rising.
And we've no idea what was the occasion, or do you have any idea what was the occasion for the gathering of the people in the image?
Well, I think that question is perfect for anybody who's trying to explain to people how to study local history. Go to the archive, have a look at the picture. Is there any more information? And of course there was. When you turned over the picture, we got a little bit more information on it. And the details on the back of the picture gave us a few keywords. They said it was Pádraig Pearse, as we had guessed. It was the Columbkilk branch of the Gaelic League. It's taken in Tower Field House, and it listed it as being in Dauphin's Barn. So we know from the data with the picture, it's a photo of Pearse inscribed by Ignatius Callender, who turned out to be the MC on the occasion. And it was a meeting of the local branch of the Gaelic League. And of course, that brings us then to what was the Gaelic League, really.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Pearse had his own connections with the Gaelic League. He was the editor of Clive Sulish, the Gaelic League newspaper. But also, many members of the Volunteers were also members of the Gaelic League. So do you think that he was at a Gaelic League meeting trying to persuade them to join the Volunteers?
I think that might be what's going on, because when I checked back the newspapers, because I reckoned this gathering had to be advertised in order to get the people there. And of course, then I started finding a sequence of ads going back as far as 1904 for this site, for events called Aireachs to be held there. And I actually found the newspaper account relating to Pearse being at this event as
and
well.
And it would have been easier to organise, or from a security point of view. I mean, you do mention, and I think you're right, that the young man on the ridge looking in the opposite direction is clearly somebody who's keeping an eye out for the polis, for the peelers. But a Gaelic League meeting would not have attracted perhaps as much suspicion from the authorities as a volunteer meeting, overt volunteer meeting.
That's absolutely right. But if you think of the location, and I'll tell you exactly where the location is shortly, it is up a laneway, a country laneway, off a main route, which meant it was easy enough to get to, but you were hidden from view from the main route. And the ridge then, this ridge that's in the land, provided a perfect lookout point to basically let them know if somebody was coming. We could revert back to the music and song and the poetry, and somebody like Pierce could be easily secreted away through the crowd.
Now, the information, as you say, on the back of the photograph, photo of Pierce speaking in Dolphin's Barn. Looking at the photograph, there's a lot of open space in whenever it was, possibly 1915, possibly early 1916. Far more open space than you'd be likely to get in Dolphin's Barn at the moment. Do we know who owned that land behind Pierce?
We do. Now, I went back to have a look and see if there was a pattern about this land, because the ridge was intriguing me as well, because that hilly terrain doesn't seem natural in the current landscape. And when I went back as far as Griffiths, it noticed...
That's Griffiths valuation in the 1850s.
Yeah. It noticed there was a house, office, land and a quarry located in the area. It was occupied by a man called John Hall. Now, it turns out there were Hall's cottages nearby as well, so that all linked up. He seemed to have operated this stone quarry, probably connected to the development of the Grand Canal Circular Line in the 1790s, because they would have needed to dig out the stone and not bring it too far to get it down to the canal. So this seems to be that quarry. And because I couldn't find anything else that connected exactly to the site. And by the time that photograph was taken, Tarrowfield House was the home of a family called Healy.
And do you think that the chimneys that you're talking about, there's a little copse of trees on the ridge and you can see chimneys behind them, is that Tarrowfield House?
That's Tarrowfield House, definitely Tarrowfield. Yeah.
Okay, so what does the name Tarrowfield itself come from, and what can you tell us about the property?
Okay, in some earlier maps that house is called Marion Villas, but that name seems to have dropped very, very quickly. And the more recent maps, certainly up to the 1940s, the house is shown as called Tarrowfield. So that links perfectly to the photograph. A newspaper article from the 1920s showed a photograph of a tower on that site. But this was being used as a tea room for day trips out of Dublin for people to go and have a cup of tea in a tower on a hill.
And was it a working tower, or was it a folly, or what was
it? I think it's a folly more than an actual defensive structure. And when I checked with a few colleagues, there seems to have been a number of these structures around Dublin at the time. There's certainly another one in Crumlin, and there was one in Ballyroane. So you find different areas had these towers. A garden folly, but they were being used as tea rooms as well. So
now you mention a lane. Were there other houses, not as grand as the big house, as Tarrowfield? Are there other houses
in the
lane?
There was only two other houses in this laneway, and they were called Larkville Cottages. I had a look at 1911 to see if I could locate families within
the census of that year.
Census of that year, and I found a family called McCann living in Larkville. And there's quite an extended family, as in the brother of the mum and the dad, and then the dad's brother was living with them and their children. And they had a growing family. I think the eldest at the time of the census was around 15. But he had an unusual name, Alexander. That name kind of stuck out for me. So that rang a bell with me as well, because I had come across it before, Alexander McCann.
Yeah, you had previous. Where did you come across Alexander McCann before?
I was looking at World War One casualties for the area, and I found eventually two stories relating to the McCann sons, but the one about Alexander was that he had died in the First World War, like many did in the area. He joined the Royal Irish Fusiliers, and sadly he died in Belgium in May 1917, and he's buried in the Elsenval Brassiere Cemetery there.
And there's another brother, there's another McCann, Christopher McCann. He also died a violent death.
Yes. Now, this is where it got really interesting, and this is where our national events start to impact on this little laneway between Crumlin and Dolphin's Barn. Christopher McCann. Where I saw the name again was on a little brass plaque in Dolphin's Barn Church. Christopher and Alexander McCann are commemorated together on this brass plaque, the memorial plaque in the church. Why two sons on the one plaque? So my first instinct was Christopher was probably a World War One casualty also, but nothing came up. And then, thanks to Liz Gillis, my good pal, she sent me on details of Ellen McCann's that's the mum, her unsuccessful application under the Army Pensions Act for a dependence allowance relating to the death of her son, Christopher. It turns out he had been accidentally shot and killed in August 1922 in Banagher Barracks in County Offaly.
So just after, pretty much just after the start of the Civil War.
Yeah, exactly. Now, she's turned down for that, so there's more to that story. So we'll come back to that in a second. But basically, Ellen was, she was fighting for her son's image and his rights in many ways. So she also applies for a posthumous medal, noting that Christopher had been a member of Na Fianna Éireann and the IRA between 1912 and 1920. And she stated he served in Jemison's distillery in, Jordan, in Marrowbone Lane during the 1916 Rising. And her application is supported by P.J. Young, who was the secretary of the 4th Battalion at the time. And there was also a Garda Síochána report in the file. And in that report, they detail Ellen's circumstances. She's dependent on the deceased at the time of his death.
And do we know what happened in Banagher Barracks,
we
why he died?
Do,
or how he
just
died.
To finish Christopher's story, she was eventually awarded a medal for him with Barr for his service between 1917 and 1921. But she didn't get that till 1945. But anyway, I'm just wondering, first of all, is Christopher that young chap on the hill? He's Na Fianna Éireann. He's living right beside the site. Pierce is speaking. I just think it might be him. Mm. It's somebody who knows the terrain. But to get to what happened in Banagher, there was an inquest into the death of McCann. And it detailed an incident in the barracks. And Christopher died there in August 1922. And it seems that it was a group of lads messing. Simple as that. It went badly wrong. Christopher was killed when the gun accidentally discharged. So she loses two sons in two different circumstances.
Do we know what happened to the McCanns later?
We do. The McCanns, it seemed they had quite a small premises on this laneway. It noted that there was horses, pigs and, you know, other livestock. That's what they had. The father had, and the sons all worked for carters in the Dofferswarm brickworks, earning about a fiver a week, £5 a week. And the father assisted in the building of new houses in Kimmage. So that shows us creeping suburbanism in the area as well. And when the houses in Keeper Road were built in Drimna in the 1940s, the McCann family relocated to that area.
Okay, let's go back to the big house. Who was Michael Healy? What was his background?
He's the man living in Towerfield House. He's a dairy farmer. We'd never associate a dairy farmer with
Dolphin
the area
Spar.
Today. But he's originally from Bohinabrina, just beyond Talla. And he marries a girl called Mary Louisa Gill. She was always called Louisa. And she lived in Spencer Lodge. It's at Dolphin's Barn Bridge. Today it's the Maxall Garage. That's where her home was. So they got married in James's Church in 1901, shortly after the death of her father. It seemed she was taking care of her father in retirement. And then she got the opportunity. When he died, she got married pretty much immediately. Michael and Louisa set up home together in Towerfield. They ran a dairy and cattle farm and they then started raising a large family in this house, Towerfield House. Their son Terence, for example, he later became a priest in Mount Argus. And they also, believe it or not, have a memorial plaque in Dolphin's Barn Church in front of the McCann
near the
one.
McCanns,
yeah, so, you know, the neighbours in the lane were all buying plaques in the church.
And was Michael Healy's dairy farm successful?
It seems to have been quite successful. He seems to have leanings towards the volunteers, certainly. The Gaelic League is a big part of his life. They were known for holding musical evenings in the area. They used the natural amphitheatre of the quarry for that effect as well in the summertime. So he was constantly letting the land be used for that. But we found a couple of references about local people going in, getting their buttermilk in the big cans and carrying them home. So he was very successful locally and well known. However, everything is going well,
I knew there was a but coming.
Yeah, there's always a but, isn't there? And I found a newspaper account from 1920. And Healy is up in court. And he's fined for bringing a diseased animal to the city market. And the cow had TB.
Right. And was that as bad as it got for Healy, or did it get worse?
Well, that's bad enough, because we were running a dairy farm and a cattle farm. Having a diseased animal and having it all over the newspapers as well isn't really doing things much good for you. But the 1930s, so we just go forward 10 years from that incident, and obviously it hangs over him for a while. The area around the farm is beginning to develop. So we're slowly moving from farmland to suburbia. And the biggest change was the building of the new school at Loretto Crumlin on the junction of the Crumlin Road and Sundry Road, right beside Towerfield. The Loretto Order opened their convent and school there. Now, one of their very first pupils to enrol in that school was Ursula Healy, a young daughter of Michael Healy. And of course, she had no distance to go to school. It was right beside them. But in November 1934, little Ursula, the age of 12, dies at Towerfield. She had contracted TB.
As so did so many, many people in the 1930s.
Yeah, so the TB was following him around pretty much. Her funeral was held in Mount Argus, and it was celebrated by her brother Terence. But from what I can gather, a huge crowd of locals were also at it too.
And what happened to the house? What happened to Towerfield itself?
Now, again, a thrall through the newspapers. An Irish press account in April 1938, they have a huge article, and it's detailing the proposed intensive house building that's going to take place in the area, quote, to house up to 1,500 families. This is planned because Dublin is suffering a housing crisis. And the plans are to build houses in this general area from the canal out towards Crumlin. There's a huge number of objections go in to this particular expansion, because there's a number of current occupiers in the area. 105, actually, 105 dwellings are affected by this, all to be wiped out. And the architect for the development is Herbert Sims. So,
and presumably Healy was one of the objectors, was he?
You're dead right, Miles. He certainly was. He stated that if they took over his dairy farm, it would deprive him and his sons of their only means of livelihood. And he was willing now to move on elsewhere if they could provide him with exactly the same accommodation. But Sims, in response, said that if they didn't get Towerfield House and Grounds, this was absolutely essential to the scheme, the 15 acres that went with the house and with the grounds. So this is 1938.
And does that scheme go ahead? Is it part of the development of Dolphinsbarn and Crumlin in the 1930s?
Believe it or not, it's only partially developed. It was never fully completed. And again, we've got to look at international events, because this is the late 30s. The Second World War breaks out. We are in the emergency. Everything stops. So the houses around the lower part, so that would be Rathdrum Road, Glenealy Road, Ocavana Road, Summon Clacher Road and Rutland Avenue, they were all developed, but the rest of the development never happened.
Does that mean that Michael Healy actually got to stay in Towerfield?
He stayed there, but eventually they moved out in the early 40s, because I think they could see there was writing on the wall. They were expecting the development to happen at any time, and it was also noted that Louisa had fallen into ill health. So they seemed to sell up, and then they moved further out into Kimmage Road West. So they move into suburbia themselves. Louisa died there in 1943, and he only survived about 4 years after her. He died in 1947, and both funerals were presided by their son Terence again. So they stayed. Kimmage Road wouldn't be too far from Mount Argus, so they were sort of in a general area. They stayed within their area, although they moved a little bit further out.
So what's there today?
Well, today, believe it or not, are the playing fields of Kevin's Hurling, Dolphin Park, they call it Dolphin Park. They have part of the site. The new junior school of the Loretto campus, which was built in the 1940s to accommodate the growing number of children in the other Crumlin development that followed after the war, the one further out. In a nice piece of continuity, though, part of the site is used for beehives and allotments. So it's still farmed, inverted commas, in that sense. Now, there's just one more thing. Healy's land stretched to the present-day Clacher Road, and it remained undeveloped until a college of further education was built there in the early 50s or thereabouts. More or less the whole site ended up under education. And it's called Pierce College.
Of course it is.
And now we know why Pierce College is called Pierce College, because it's pretty much located on the site where Pádraig Pearse addressed the crowds in 1915, as depicted in the photograph I showed you at the beginning
of
the interview.
I love the circularity of that. You start off with a photograph of Pádraig Pearse and you end up with Pierce College. But in the interim, you have been down more rabbit holes than Alice in Wonderland. Cathy, thank you so much indeed, Cathy Scuffle, our guest, for sharing your research. And this is what you, this is what happens when you give an historian a photograph and they start following the trail. Cathy, thank you very much.
Thank you, Miles.
That's all we've time for on this evening's programme. Details of all our items as well as podcasts are available on our website, rte.ie/historyshow. My thanks tonight to Harry Bookless and Damien Chanel on sound, and our researcher Ian Kennelly. The History Show is a Pegasus production for RTE. For now, for me, Miles Dongan, and producer Lorcan Clancy, goodbye and thanks for listening.